Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Why are we doing this?
Why are we doing what?
All of it.
All right, let's do it.
This woman shows up on my doorstep, claims she's the mother of Jack McKay's long-lost daughter.
What?
Yeah. So I told him I'd get him something to eat. Will you fix me some of this stuff up quick?
Yeah, sure.
Now I know what people mean by fruitcakes at Christmas.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode, if you're wondering, is Season 4, Episode 15, Somewhere in the World, It's Christmas. And now here are your hosts, Father Christmas Tari Ariano and her helpful elf, Sarah D. Bunting.
Sarah doesn't even get to be Sinterklaas or something.
Krampus?
Krampus. Yes. That fits.
Glarkware t-shirts, glarkware.com. Get your podcast-inspired t-shirts there. Also, if you want to buy an ad on this podcast, $50 for a personal ad, 100 smackaroos for a business ad. Go to previously.tv/ads today.
Yep. It's Christmas in 90210 land.
Na, 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 na,
no, that Christmas. Was the last one.
Oh.
Sarah, let's get through this, because it's not Christmas here.
I'd just like to note
yes,
that the food Dylan asks Nat to pack up for him, mm-hmm. I mean, is free.
Oh, yeah.
But also is intended for homeless people.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
So place a fucking order somewhere. You have 10 gazillion dollars.
Yeah. Also, it's Los Angeles. Ugh. Like, shit's open. It's not like you're in Hawaii with your stupid mother. Where nothing would be open on Christmas Eve. I'm just saying. Other than McDonald's. Thank God for McDonald's.
And all the resorts.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But then you got to pay a sweet penny.
You do. You do have to pay a sweet penny. All right. Speaking of
penny.
Hawaii.
Okay.
Let's start with our D story, which is Walsh flashback fiesta. This is so fucking dumb. The Walshes are going to Hawaii for Christmas, yet they decorated the house. Work smarter, not harder, Walshes. Anyway, in the getting ready to go Christmas Eve montage, we spend an actually shocking amount of time watching Brenda preening in the mirror in her swimsuit. It's so wrong. So long. I made a gif of like the full length of it because it's shocking. Like the file name of this gif is "What pervert edited this?" Because seriously, what pervert edited this?
It's like the somewhat intimate adjustments that ladies you all make to like the boob line, right. And also to make sure that, especially with the high cut suits of this era, some curlies weren't peeking out the sides. Like, do we need to see this? If you didn't have enough footage for a full episode, just put a fucking rerun on.
Yes. Yeah, but this is the only spoiler alert. This is all we're gonna see of Brenda in her swimsuit because they don't actually make it to Hawaii. Anyway, this is stupid. Apparently, we also established in this scene that apparently Brenda is scared about flying over the ocean. So now we know. So then Dylan and his prisoner-ready gray sweatshirt stop in to give all the Walshes their gifts. And by the way,
and kiss Brenda on the lips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey.
Which I thought you were back with Kelly. Whatever. This cheap fuck, by the way, speaking of having a gajillion dollars, couldn't even pay to ship his gift to his mother, instead making Cindy mule it to her, which I know this was before, like, check baggage fees, but Jesus Christ, go to the fucking post office, you cheapskate. Anyway, Dylan is going to Baja for Christmas because, of course, he is, and he's 100% himself all the time. Speaking of cheap fuckers, these cheap fuckers can't even get a cab. Clip number 2.
Is that the shuttle?
No, it's King Kamehameha. Of course it's the shuttle.
Sarah.
Do you have to be such a twat all the time? This is one of like four just koozie things he says to his mother or sister, not to his dad.
No, never.
For whatever reason, because I guess they're the co-parents. Like, do you ever hear yourself?
Yeah.
Go live in the dorms then. Ugh.
He fucking sucks, even at Christmas. Can't turn it off for a day. Anyway, then we're on the plane. There's plane stuff, Brenda's nervousness. Later, there's turbulence. And there's also even more confusion about how the fuck semesters work at this school in clip number 3.
I have been reading this brochure from the hotel. We can take a luxury Watsu water treatment at the spa, but they do have one rule. Guests are not allowed to study for finals while using the facility. Sorry.
Finals are after Christmas? Is that how it works in the States? Because it wasn't for us.
It was for us and one other school, and we were literally the only ones.
All right.
Everyone else was done by December 20th.
Yeah, because it was like 12 weeks was the first half of the year, and then we had finals in December. And if you were lucky, those were like wrapped up, you know, the first week. That never worked out for me, even though I was the registrar's daughter. Thanks, Dad. I always had one on like the 22nd and was bitter about it anyway. All right. Well, as long as there is a precedent, I guess it's all right. There's also a segue here. Go ahead.
Not anywhere, really.
Right.
Like, yeah, whatever.
I mean, if hazing is happening after Thanksgiving, who knows what the fuck with this school. Anyway, there's also a segue here to Steve recapping his baseball caper to Nat and bringing in the new wrinkle of his dad having been a past keg president, which I don't think we knew before and definitely still don't care about. And then we're back on the plane.
No, and actually his dad went to USC.
Yes, that was another thing they retconned. So. his dad's academic history having gone through some changes, like Andrea's biography erasing a sister that she had in season 1. Anyway, back on the plane, there's more plane stuff. They're turning back to LAX because of a problem with the landing gear. No one for a single second thinks the show is going to crash this plane, so who cares? Anyway, they land. Phew. And on Christmas Day, the Walshes decide to cancel their trip and spend Christmas on the mainland. Brandon rolls up his sleeves in an unacceptable way, which you can see in the visual aids. End of D plot. There was also like, that was almost all flashbacks, but I just skipped them because no one cares. Moving on to our C story. Andrea's midnight mass madness. So Andrea already tried and failed to get a primer on Catholic midnight mass from the Presbyterian Brandon as opposed to known Catholic Donna. Also, it should be noted here. Andrea shows up at the Walsh house when they think she's the shuttle because she was, quote, in the neighborhood, unquote. No, you weren't. Shut up.
And also, did that sweet scholarship package from CU contain a driver's license? Because the only transport we've ever heard you taking is the bus.
Right. Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Also, how do you not... whatever.
Yeah. And again... Not the right religion to come and like beg this information off of Brandon. Who cares? Jessie comes to pick her up at her dorm room, where she still is. God. Like she doesn't have two kinds of family in town. But anyway, she opens the door in the most ridiculous fucking church lady outfit you ever saw.
Oh my God.
There are gloves. She's wearing fucking gloves. It's 1993. Anyway, there's boring talk about the differences in dress between church and synagogue, and she's nervous and apparently has never even seen a movie about Catholics in her entire life. She has no idea what is going to happen. Anyway, it ends with him reassuring her, and then they're exchanging I love yous. No one cares. She also, you can see her stupid outfit in the visual aids. And in addition to this, one of the cringiest pictures of this
Jesus.
Character.
It's so bad.
She's like gazing up at him with these like, like simpering eyebrows. I can't describe it. It's in the visual aids, but it's like, it's just everything bad about her character in one shot. It's like, it just makes her so loathsome. I mean, I want to like her.
Combined with everything that is loathsome about how this character is dressed,
yes.
Styled, and shot.
Yes.
Like, I mean... Were there multiple witnesses to the murder of an innocent kitten?
Yeah.
Inquiring minds need to know because it's just,
it's so cruel.
It is remarkably cruel.
Anyway.
And boring at the same time.
Yep. Then they go to mass and she fucking loves it. Who cares? Moving on to our B story, Donna and David's post-anniversary disasters. So Donna is decorating the Christmas tree and boring Kelly with the story of each individual ornament's provenance. Again, Donna is presumably going to Houston for Christmas. Why bother decorating? Whatever. Anyway, Dylan has both a Christmas and a birthday gift for her. They kiss for a weirdly long time, which I also gift. Like, why? Anyway, they're also in front of Kelly, so like this isn't even anything lascivious. It's just like they're both bored, so they're going to kiss each other. I don't know. Anyway, Jackie is supposedly out of town with Aaron. Dylan is about to be gone until New Year's Eve. What the fuck is Kelly doing for the holiday? We never find out. She's just apparently going to hang out at the apartment by herself. David is then dressed up for something at Mel's. Donna compliments him. He ignores her so hard that even Dylan notices how pissy David is and comments on it in clip number 4.
What's wrong with him?
Nothing. He's okay. It's just the whole custody fight. Been kind of brutal on him. But you know, Kelly here could be a big girl and bury the axe for one evening.
Not an expression.
If I go to Mel's, Jackie's going to think that I'm on his side.
Kelly,
it's a question of loyalty and I can't do it.
But you could if you wanted to.
Help.
Hey, give credit where credit is due. Donna is the master manipulator.
What? Where did that
That's come master from? Manipulation?
Right.
Trying to get us to care about this stupid custody storyline / not understanding that David's being a pill because she won't put out. Mm-hmm. Like, this whole storyline just beggars. I mean, never mind bad writing.
Yeah.
It's like a fundamental misapprehension of human behavior.
Yes. Even Donna would understand why David is acting like this. And she would not be making excuses for him except that she's in an abusive relationship, which, by the way, she is. He is abusive. Anyway, Donna then sees David poring over a magazine and comes around the corner to stuff him with a mistletoe. And he ignores her, but she won't take not now for an answer in clip number 5.
Face it, there is no way out. You are trapped.
Yeah, I guess I am.
Fuck you! That's
Oh my god, then just dump her and get a hooker, Dillweed.
He is so terrible! He's such an asshole. How does he have any friends? And the other thing is, it's not like in this episode he's shitty to everyone. It's just her. Otherwise, he's like pretty normal to everyone, including Kelly, who supposedly he's mad at about this alleged custody thing that hasn't been brought up in like 5 episodes. Oh, God.
Well, Tara, in his defense, he is wearing a jacket in which 2 buildings are having all the sexual intercourse that he is not.
That's true.
That's right. It's Bride of 2 Buildings fucking jacket. And you can see it in the visual aids really if you dare.
You can. It takes up all the visual aids. It just like crowds out all of them.
We only could put visual and then we had to stop because the jacket took up all the room on the internet. Sorry.
It's true. Yep. Anyway, Kelly has later. You see, she's been eating all the chocolates that Dylan gave her. Don tries again to get Kelly to come with him to this Mel thing, and David snaps at Donna because he's an asshole. And then at the good old Doheny Palm where Mel lives, David mopes on a couch in a corner and checks his watch while flashing back to last week when Donna told him she changed her mind about fucking him again, and then the previous 2 times that she informed him that he wasn't going to be getting it wet as long as she's involved, as if we didn't know that was why he's in this mood. Mel comes over to David to try and cheer him up, thinking he's still upset about the custody fight, which he is not, as we see again when Donna nicely brings him over some pizza rolls and he snarls at her. And then Mel gets a call. Kelly broke a tooth. He looks up to see Donna trying to be brave, holding the stupid tray of pizza rolls after David has denied her. So you can see this in the visual aids, too, because I made a GIF. It's so bizarre. It's like woman standing alone, sadly, with pizza rolls. The GIF. Anyway, then Mel gives Kelly a temporary crown and they both have a nice friendly moment where they both act like grown-ups and, in his case, a professional. After the party, Donna and Kelly chat by the tree. David is still at Mel's. Kelly assumed that Donna and David had a fight, possibly because David has been a total pisspot to Donna this entire episode. But Donna makes excuses for him again. Kelly can tell that she's putting on a brave face again, like the abused girlfriend that she is. And on Christmas morning, Andrea, Donna, David, and Kelly are all helping out at the Peach Pit with Steve playing Santa, of course, when Kelly finally tries to make David act right in clip number 6.
David, you've been ignoring her all morning.
Yeah, well, in case you haven't noticed, I've been serving meals all morning.
You be nice.
Look, I'm doing the best I can, all right?
All right.
What does that mean?
That's the best you can?
Seriously.
What's the worst? Backhanding her across the face while wearing a bunch of pointy rings? Fuck you.
No. Like, you know, people aren't always in good moods, but when you live in a society, sometimes you fucking fake it. Like, you don't have to show everyone what you're actually feeling all the time. Just saying.
Yeah, like bad boyfriend, bad friend, bad roommate.
Yeah, bad person. Like, also shitty at his dad's party. Like, you know what? Just don't go. Like, what is your wrong with you? God. Anyway, meanwhile, Andrea's...
And take a pizza roll, you pinko.
Take a pizza roll. Pizza rolls are good.
Who cares who's holding them? They're pizza rolls.
Seriously.
Get your head right.
Meanwhile, Andrea's yammering on and on about her Midnight Mass experience to Donna, who tries to care, but like the rest of us, cannot. Andrea finally notices Donna's upset, and Donna repeats David's doing the best I can line. And later, Donna finds David cleaning up in the kitchen and finally decides to quit lying to herself about what's happening in clip number 7.
David, you're missing everything.
I just want to finish up.
Okay, let me help.
Donna, just go back with the others, all right? I'll be done in a couple of minutes.
What's wrong?
Nothing.
David, don't shut me out. You can talk to me.
I can't.
You can't what?
Donna, I can't go on like this, all right? Donna, I love you. You know what? I don't even want to discuss this right now. It's your birthday. It's Christmas. Let's just go out and...
No. What are you saying?
It's our relationship. It's just not working for me anymore. Especially the sex part. I'm sorry. I wanted to wait until
just
after...
Get away from me.
Donna.
Please.
Not her best
I
work.
Mean, I hope you got her an acting class for your for her birthday, because...
Yeah.
That was so weirdly directed, too. That's actually not Tori Spelling's fault.
No, it's
it was just like immediate bursting into tears and weird being a five-year-old, which she had also been doing throughout this episode, mm-hmm. creepily.
Yep. So that's it for them. Like, I don't know why he suddenly decided after 2 years, and like, she's already cock-teased him about like pretending they were going to fuck before and then changing her mind once already. Like, all of a sudden after 2 years, he's like, well, it's going to dry up and fall off. So I guess I have to find someone else. I don't get it.
Is this like a New Year's, like, let me evaluate my life and start to make some changes? Like, okay.
Yeah. Well, good luck. We know what happens next with him, and it doesn't involve a girl. Anyway, moving on to our A story. Enter Dylan Scamily. I mean, family. And credit where it's due, I think. I forget who it is on the boards that came up with the name Scamily or repeated it. I think it was the user Andy Smith. If that's not correct, please let us know. I forget who had the first instance of calling Suzanne and Erica the Scamily, but I love it, and we're going to be using it a lot. So thank you. Dylan storyline. So he's throwing the last of his shit into an army fucking duffel bag. Jesus H. I also have a picture of this in the visual aids, and I think the file name is Get Luggage Pinko. Because seriously. Anyway.
Yeah, I think it's actually Get Real Luggage Poser, but yeah.
Either way.
I mean, I tried to use my dad's one of those for one break.
Yeah.
Got home and was like, yeah, no, I'm not built for this.
No.
Help.
It's not convenient. Like, it's uncomfortable. Everything is just stacked on top of each other. You have to dump everything out wherever you're going. Like, get real luggage. Anyway. He then gazes at a framed headshot of Josh Taylor he stole from a dry cleaner somewhere. That's also in the visual aids, because it totally is. All that's missing is, like, his autograph. Anyway, off a reverie that ends with the extremely festive memory of Jack's exploding car, the doorbell rings, and we get this in clip number 8.
Hi. Are you Dylan McKay?
I don't know. Who's asking?
Well, I'm an old friend of your father's.
Whatever.
He said that if I was ever in town, I should look you up.
He's dead.
I'm sorry. We've caught you at a bad time, haven't we?
Sorta. Yeah, I need to get out of here right now.
Well, we won't bother you then. But would you happen to know of a decent motel anywhere near the bus station?
I don't really know that part of town very well.
I'm sorry.
Not even from the scene?
You don't use my phone?
Are you sure it isn't too much trouble?
Come on in. It's fine.
I'm Suzanne Steele. This is my daughter, Erica.
Hi. Can I get you anything to drink? Would you like coffee, water, or soda?
Coffee would be great. Anything you have will be fine.
Okay. There's a phone book on the table right there.
Mom, I don't feel right about being here.
Oh, honey, we've come this far. We can't back out now. Listen, just do exactly what we talked about on the bus. We'll get through this, I promise.
It takes so long for us to find out, spoiler alert, that this is like semi-real and semi-a scam, but yet the seeds are planted surprisingly early. Like, that's shady.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, I don't know. Just as we go forward with the scamily plot line, during which I will be commenting many times on the fact that it seems like TV writers never have siblings because of the way some of these brother sister relationships are consistently written. Mm-hmm. This is the creepiest of the lot, but talk about like people being written. TV writers don't, I think, understand how to write anyone between the ages of 5 and 15.
Yeah.
Because Erica gets her period in like 2 months.
Yeah.
So when the, like, babyish little, this is my family paper plate drawing shows up at the end of the episode and you barf yourself to death while you're dying. Yep. Remember, this is apparently supposed to be someone who's like 12.
Yeah. Who's pubescent.
Did the bus run over her head? What the hell? No offense, people whose heads have been run over by buses.
Maybe some of these cells that should have been turned into brain cells were instead turned into hair cells because she's got a lot. It's like down to her waist. It looks really thick, too. That has got to be unpleasant in Los Angeles. Maybe in Iowa it was okay, but that shit's going to be hot. Anyway, speaking of Erica, when we next see her, she is extremely rudely making herself at home with her filthy bus shoes on Dylan's futon, which I know it's a futon, but still, she just met him. Suzanne fakes like she's encouraging Dylan to get on his way, but she clearly does not mean it. She also says it's crazy how much he looks like Jack, which he does not at all. And they have this exchange, clip number 9.
From the way you say that, you must have known him pretty well.
Well, it was a long time ago. He liked to take me on business trips.
I see. Sort of like a traveling companion.
And from a sassy kid right off the farm, it was quite a thrill seeing places like Hong Kong, Jamaica. Your father meant a lot to me.
Well, I can see why. You're obviously well taken care of, and I know you like to light your cigarettes, that kind of thing.
Fuck off.
Please don't be offended by that. It's just that Jack's been dead for over a year now, and that seems like an awful long time for someone to pay their condolences.
I wanted to get in touch with you the moment I heard about Jack's death, but the truth is, I just didn't know what to say. And then it started to rain.
I realize how distracting the pitter-patter of raindrops can be.
Fuck off.
If you lived on the banks of the Mississippi like we did, and lost everything you had in the world in the flood like we did, I seriously doubt you'd be making jokes about the rain. You know, the only reason I bothered to get in touch with you in the first place was I promised my daughter I'd take her to Disneyland for a couple of days to help her forget that she's been living in a Red Cross shelter for the last 6 months. Thanks so much for the coffee. We don't want to put you out any longer than we already have.
Been a bust in the jaw in answer to a prayer.
But Erica's asleep.
Get you a blanket.
Hey, first of all, the Mississippi goes all the way to Manitoba. Interesting. Second of all, if you didn't want guests, you should have called them a cab 2 hours ago. Since you didn't, don't be a dick.
Yeah. Also, you can see in the visual aids, Erica has fallen asleep in like the most uncomfortable looking position that there ever was. Her chin is like...
I kind of love that. That was so realistic. That's exactly how a little kid falls asleep, though. Like they've been slung onto the furniture.
Yeah. Anyway, Suzanne then looks on at like, what was the Sontae Kimes kid's name?
Ken.
Okay.
Ith.
Good job, little Kenny. Ken. She's like managed to prolong this encounter at Dylan's for a little bit longer. Anyway. Then Suzanne makes to wake up Erica to take to the bus station motel, but Dylan tells her to let her sleep. Also, it's still light outside, by the way. Suzanne fake apologizes, acting like this wasn't her plan all along. Dylan insists on having them stay over, which I guess he thinks entitles him to be rude and nosy in clip number 10.
Suzanne, let me ask you something, and I don't mean to pry, but what about Erica's father?
That's prying.
Did he just leave you hanging or what?
Well, you could say that.
Phrasing.
He died last year.
I'm so sorry. Were they close?
No.
That's what the world needs, another absentee father. I gotta tell you, I was gonna slam the door right in your face, and I would have, but I looked at that little girl and something special happened.
Ew.
Did I say something?
No.
Jack was her father, Dylan.
What?
Jack was her father. Erica is your sister.
So stop looking at her like that and talking about her like that. 'Cause fucked up.
Yeah. Also, put it together, Dylan. Jesus Christ. Anyway, then Dylan goes to Peach Pit to pick up dinner for his new family, as we heard up top. And he has this exchange with Nat, clip 11.
Hey, what are you doing here? I thought you were in Baja.
Oh, I'll tell you the truth, Nat, I wish I was.
Yeah, well, your loss is our game. Roll up your sleeves and give us a hand getting this stuff ready for tomorrow.
I can't, Nat.
Oh, come on, Dylan. You're always saying how much you want to help the homeless. Now I'm giving you a chance and you're flaking out on me.
When has Dylan ever said anything like that? Dylan doesn't want to help people.
What he meant, you misheard, Nat. What he meant was help himself to the homeless's Christmas buffet.
Seriously.
These assholes.
Worst. Anyway, then he says the thing that we heard in our opening clip. He's sure that Suzanne is hustling him. Nat thinks this is the one night of the year to give a stranger the benefit of the doubt. Sure, Nat. Back at home, Erica wakes up, and as soon as she hears that Suzanne told Dylan about them, she races outside to where he's fixing his motorcycle barefoot in December, which I know it's Los Angeles, it still gets cold anyway, to give him a gift. It's a terrible picture that she drew on the bus, and she wants to know, clip number 12.
Do you like it?
Sarah?
Not as much as I would like it if you were written appropriate to your apparent age.
Yes, but he's all mushy about it, of course. And the next day, Suzanne and Erica apparently slept through Dylan's supposed departure to Mexico. Erica hilariously says that Suzanne should have written to Dylan first and warned him they were coming. True. But Suzanne says they can't stay, and just as they're about to go out to Disneyland at some terribly late hour on Christmas Day when there's literally no point even trying because it's going to be jammed to the tits, a very festive Dylan hustles in with a Christmas tree as if he's also got a whole car full of Christmas shit, which even in L.A., no, he does not, unless he went to fucking Save On drugstore and just bought whatever he could find. He's also got 3 tickets to Disneyland somehow, and lots of hugs for Erica, which is kind of cute. Sorry.
It's gross.
All right,
and
fine.
He says, I never had a sister before. Like, clearly, since if you'd had a sister, you'd understand that this is not how you interact with your opposite sex sibling.
Mm-mm. And that's the episode. Merry Christmas. Our MVP. Mel, because he left his own party to be a professional and fix someone's tooth, which he should. At least he can be ethical and moral sometimes. Good job, Mel.
Yeah, I agree. Mel, sure.
All right.
I sort of miss him. Like, I don't understand exactly why. Like, sure, make him cheaty, but then this whole custody thing is ridiculous. Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, I miss Mel.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if they thought they needed to have a bone of contention between Kelly and David, where it's like anything David does about anything anytime is like enough for them to have a fight about it because David's a fucking dick. So why they had to sell out Mel in order to
David.
David. Speaking of which, least valuable player. David, fucking just jerk off. What is wrong with you?
Seriously. I'm going to go with Dylan, though.
Well, fair enough. And that is a good segue to the Kim Challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
Five ways in this episode Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. I won't steal what is probably going to be Sarah's, but I'll say fixing your motorcycle barefoot is probably dangerous because anything could fall on your bare toes and break or cut them.
Don't heist homeless people's food.
There it is.
You're rich. Fucking pay for it. That's bad.
It's bad to use a duffel bag when you're going to Baja. That's going to just ruin all your stupid clothes. Even though they are stupid, get real luggage.
It's bad to just let strangers into your house, like claiming that they knew your father. So what? Call him a cab. Make him wait for it outside.
It's potentially dangerous.
In their bare feet.
Yes. It's potentially also dangerous to take at face value what someone is telling you about your rich dead dad, because they might have ulterior motives. Spoiler alert. And that makes five.
Why should I take a back seat? Because I'm a girl?
You shouldn't. It's time for our excerpt from the I Hate Brenda book, Shannon Doherty Exposed. By the way, this title is seven words long, and every single time I have to look at the cover of the book because I can never remember what it is. Anyway, when we left off last time, Shannon Doherty had embarrassed herself in front of Barbara Bush at the RNC. Here's what happened next. Shannon was incensed, aghast that Mrs. Bush didn't know who she was. It was incomprehensible to her. The impact of the trauma may explain her horrid behavior behind the scenes of the GOP convention as described in the following letter. So this is all quotations from someone who is supposedly there. We'll surely never see eye to eye with your ilk, but one thing we do have in common is an intense dislike for the aforementioned Doherty, I guess. We were truly appalled with Shannon's shenanigans at the Republican National Convention in Houston, let me tell you. Young Republican Women's Caucus invited her to appear in the hopes that she would be able to capture the youth vote, since she does, after all, appear in a very popular television show, and we thought that someone so beautiful and talented would dispel the notion that Republican women are all pinched-up dowagers. How'd that work out? The first indication that Shannon wasn't all sweetness and light came when we had to negotiate with her manager at some length. We could clearly hear Shannon in the background screaming at him that she didn't have time to deal with a bunch of drips like us. But she agreed to come somewhat reluctantly when we balked at having to fly her and her dog first class and have a 3-page rider of food and cosmetic items available to her backstage.
Wow.
She told us to go sell some extra fucking cookies. She would only stay at the Four Seasons. And we thought it was kind of odd her masseuse, male, was staying in her room, but it did save a little money on another room. Was this masseuse Judd Nelson? Not clarified. Shannon was scheduled to do a speech in to rev up the nation's youth the first day, but she said she didn't feel well. The second day, we sent a limo over, but it didn't have a mirror in it, so she stomped back upstairs in a huff. Third day, she made quite an entrance with her mini entourage. The door on her dressing room said Shannon with an O, so she refused to enter until we changed it. No one was allowed to make eye contact with her or address her until spoken to first, and you thought royalty was for Europeans. I never saw her without a lit cigarette and a tumbler of tequila. A tumbler!
Wow.
And as my father used to say, spewing an unending stream of swear words that would make a sailor blush. Shannon stiffed our organization for a $2,000 phone bill, too, which is classic for someone making nearly $35,000 a week. Her backstage antics completely negated her belief in home, family, and flag, and besmirched her identification as a young Republican woman. She's so evil, I think she should be a Democrat. Sincerely, Melissa Evancourt. Best letter in the world! Oh my god, this is like the best excerpt from the book. End of excerpt.
Oh, you had me besmirched. Next time on Again With This, meth is hard. David gets cranked up on Crystal. Dylan gets weirded out by Suzanne. We get weirded out by his creepalicious relationship with Erica. And will Steve get blackballed by the Keg House in his big showdown with John Sears? Come see our showdown with good taste in the visual aids for this episode and all the other episodes of Again With This. That's at our website at previously.tv. You can also follow us on Twitter at Previously TV. My brilliant co-host Tara Ariano is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. I'm Sarah D. Bunting. I'm just okay. And I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. And our unendingly patient producer, David T. Cole, is on Instagram at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.